Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the official proceedings of council, I begin each council meeting on Wednesday morning by asking the question, how are the children? The reason that I ask that is because when a community takes care of its children, it's a good indication that the community is healthy and safe and well. And we invite young people in to talk to us each week and share some of the information they have about what's important to them. This morning we have three young folks from Ron Russell Middle School with their teacher, Shelley Hamness. And so could Sarah, Edwin, and Kim come forward, please? Okay, who's going to start? Good, you, Edwin.
My name is Edwin Garcia. I was born in Los Angeles, California, but I have resided in Portland since I was 4 months old. I live in Southeast Portland and attend Ron Russell Middle School in the David Douglas School District. My mom is from Honduras. She has raised me as a single mother, asking nothing from the system. She has worked hard to provide a life for us. I am privileged to call her my mother. Currently, I participate in track and field. I also enjoy other sports such as basketball, football, and soccer. I enjoy reading books. My language arts teacher, Mrs. Wetzel, has encouraged me to read Beowulf, a book which I deeply treasure. As a first-generation Latino in the United States, I have many opportunities available to me. I have the right and privilege to a free education, safe schools, and a community free from crime. I live in the area of Southeast Portland. I love this area because of the rich cultural diversity it represents. You can drive down 82nd Avenue and see signs for stores and restaurants written in other languages such as Vietnamese, Chinese, Russian, and Spanish. As a young man growing up in this area, I am faced daily with the reality of gangs, drugs, crime, and other illegal activities. While police presence is strong, it does not prevent the illegal activities which occur in my community. When looking at how the problem can be solved, I feel it is vital our citizens take pride and ownership of their community. This involves neighborhood watches, litter patrols, community centers, and other neighborhood activities. I feel the youth of my community need to be more involved. During the summer, many youth do not have access to sports clubs, computers, and adult mentors. Many end up wandering the streets or simply wasting their time watching TV or playing video games. I feel a community center will unite my community, as well as provide sports facilities, computers, and adult mentors for our youth. These centers have been proven to reduce crime in other urban areas. Sir, I am asking you and the members of City Council to loosen funds to build a community center accessible to the neighborhood which serves the David Douglas School District. This would be done through the Portland Parks and Recreation Department, similar to the Mount Scott Recreational Center. Thank you for listening to what I have to say, and I appreciate your immediate action.
Thank you, Edwin.
Hello, my name is Sarah Wilson-Arnett. I live on 127th and Market Street. My neighborhood is fairly quiet with a few disruptions here and there. We have a few parks in my neighborhood, and right across the street is a church and shelter for women and children who don't have a place to stay. I went around and asked my friends and family about concerns in the community. A couple of people mentioned the violence at the MAC stations. I think there should be more police on duty to keep it safer. Another issue is the gas prices are continuing to increase. But there are some good things in the community. The church I go to, Grace Covenant, participates in the 82nd pickup. Once a month, we go to 82nd and pick up trash. I enjoy working for the community. Overall, I think the area I live in is nice and very diverse. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Sarah.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Fan. I'm an eighth grader at Ron Russell Middle School. My neighborhood is pretty normal. We all know each other. Despite looking normal, there are a few bad things that happen. We have problems like graffiti, gangs, and theft. I believe our community is becoming accustomed to these social problems. We shouldn't do that. What is happening now affects the future of our community. We need preventive programs to make it a safe place. These days, parents are uncomfortable about their kids walking or taking the bus. A neighborhood watch program would put parents' worries at ease. I want to make a difference. I want to participate in making community a safer place. I really believe that together we can make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. All these three young folks are from the school's leadership class, and I think they've certainly demonstrated leadership this morning. Can we give him a hand, please? Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams. Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. Please read the first communication.
Item 556, request of Vladimir Golovan to address Council to suggest the Independent Police Review Division conduct an investigation in the 2006 Portland election.
Please come forward. Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Vladimir Golovan.
Okay, please proceed.
Thank you. Dear Mr. Mayor and City Commissioners, I'm here to ask you for advice and for help. I wrote a complaint against my prosecutor, Eric Wassman, to Oregon Department of Justice and to Multnomah County DA, asking them to investigate if Mr. Wassman broke any law in the course of my investigation. And I recently received a letter from Department of Justice which says that Attorney General Hardy Myers and District Attorney Michael Schrank gave Wassman my complaint against Wassman for investigation. In other words, Mr. Wassman investigated himself. I believe it constitutes a conflict of interest, and naturally Mr. Wassman investigated himself, found himself not guilty, and decided not to press charges against himself, which I believe is in violation of ethic laws that he did not disclose the conflict of interest. And I would like to ask Mayor and City Commissioners to formally request a new investigation of Portland election scandal of 2006 based on newly discovered evidence which Mr. Wassman refused to even find out what the evidence were, and to formally request an investigation of Prosecutor Eric Wassman. But please, if you decide to do that, don't suggest the investigation agency to assign the case of, please suggest the investigating agency not to assign the case of Wassman to be investigated by Wassman. And I believe that voter-owned election scandal of 2006 is an extremely important matter to Portland taxpayers, and it is absolutely necessary for you, Mr. Mayor, and commissioners to have a meeting with me personally so that I could show you everything and explain to you everything. I got nothing to be afraid of, and I would be happy to open up and explain everything, and especially because the newly discovered evidence suggests that there might be a special interest group that has been trying to kill voter-owned elections by all means possible, ethical and unethical, legal and illegal. And meeting with me will help you make the right decision. So that's what I would like to ask you to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Please call the next.
Item 557, request of Sharon Nassett to address Council regarding the Columbia River Crossing Project and the National Environmental Policy Act.
Could you call her name again, please?
Sharon Nassett.
Please call the next name.
558, request of Lisa Iacuzzi to address Council regarding changing the camping ban ordinance.
When you speak, state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Lisa Lee Iacuzzi, and I represent a blog called Not a Good Queer. I'd like to talk about the camping ban ordinance. It's an unfair ordinance because it criminalizes poverty. I'd like to respond to the editorial that the Oregonian just wrote. The fact that they cited that people were just camping all over the city recklessly was really not a fact. People were camping under the bridges. People were hiding. People were making themselves very invisible, and yet they were still arrested and giving a misdemeanor violation, trespassing too. So I don't think the public was very aware that poor people were being criminalized for being poor. I don't think the public was aware of it at all. So I'm here today to let you know that the campers outside are not going to leave until the camping ordinance is modified, adjusted, some type of compromise. I'm disappointed not to see Commissioner Adams here today in this. He knows the campers are outside. Campers, protesters, whatever you want to call us, are outside and wanting this issue to change. I don't think people are ready for people just to be camping out Colonel Summers Park in the middle of the park. I don't think people really want that. I think if you made phone calls and you realize for almost the last 2 years, every domestic violence shelter has been full. It's like finding a bed is a needle in a haystack. You wouldn't believe the people who are outside. It's a wide, diverse group of people. A lot of runaways, teenagers, all the gamut that you could possibly imagine. And they come about 1 o'clock at night, and they leave about 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning. So you only see a very small part of the people who are protesting. I don't believe that we're getting public support. We're getting public support because I think that people are finally happy to see people taking control of their lives. I don't want anything from you. I don't want any free ride from you at all. I have a master's degree. I've paid my own way for my own education. I'm actually a licensed teacher in Oregon. I don't want anything free. I just don't want to be treated like a criminal. Thank you.
Thank you. Folks, we, during the course of a regular city council meeting, we do not clap. You can raise your hands and go like that if you support someone, but that's the only show of support. Please call the next.
Item 559, request of Princess H, Homeless Liberation Front, to address council regarding the homeless protest and related matters that affect the community.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, I'm Princess H.
Could you perhaps get a little bit closer to the microphone? Thank you.
I'm Princess H, and I'm affiliated with the Homeless Liberation Front. I have been one of the original protesters sleeping outside of City Hall as of the 25th of April, 2008. And I come before you with a statement, no Gestapo tactics. It is inhumane of the city of Portland to not allow me to exist, thus I am. And there are many, and they are diverse, and they are culturally diverse as well. And we want a place to rest, because we're human beings and we require a minimum of 4 hours and a betterly functioning 8 hours rest. You know, I'm kind of tired right now. Even resting outside is a bit weary. With the ordinances in place, without proper and adequate provision and accommodation, Portland is touting itself as unprogressive and inhumane. And I'm here to ask you what you're willing to do about that. And I'm also asking you to negotiate with us, to work with us, to resolve this matter until Portland is a city that is truly ready for progress and resolution. Because it's been noted by yourselves and others that poverty is increasing, and it's a fact. And we want to do something about it. We aren't looking for a free ride. We aren't looking for a ticket. We are looking for a way to truly progress in a city that's already touted itself as having that reputation. Thanks.
Thank you.
Request of Arthur Rios Sr., Homeless Liberation Front, to address council regarding the protest in front of City Hall.
Thanks for being here. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Arthur Rios Sr. Good morning. Hello, my name is Arthur Rios Sr. I represent myself and the Homeless Liberation Front, which is currently protesting outside this building. I was homeless for 9 years, an addict for 25. I am just under 2 years housed, clean, and sober. On April 25th of this year, there were 9 people protesting in front of City Hall, several of whom have been swept from under the Burnside Bridge the night before. The message spread from word of mouth, and we have grown. As of May 5th, we had 76 people protesting out in front of City Hall. Homeless folk, like the rest of our great city's people, have needs. We recognize the city efforts through the 10-year plan to end homelessness. We feel that this process misses several things through. In the Sitlai Law, this law has been proven to unfair target homeless people. 79 of the 88 warnings and citations between August 31st, 2007 and January 22nd, 2008 were people who were homeless. And the anti-camping law. It has a if a person has nowhere to sleep, it is unfair to give him a ticket for the basic human functions. Open shelters for people who do not fit the basic stereotype. Couples, family, people with pets, all needs shelters that they can use. Designate and build more affordable housing. By our own city council's guess, the downtown region of our city is 2,000 low-income housing units short of what is needed. With this many units missing, there are many people with jobs who do not have a place to call home. Stop the sweeps. It is morally wrong to sweep people if they have no other place to go. Sleeping on the sidewalk because you have no other place to go is a crime of desperation. Our city should have enough compassion to protect each those without a home. Designate a green zone where it is safe to exist and people will not feel prosecuted based on their housing status. It would be great if we felt really and truly listened to the respected by City Hall. This includes opening immediate dialogue with us about meeting these needs and involving us in the 10-year plan to end homelessness in a meaningful way. We will continue to protest in a nonviolent manner, demanding our basic needs and calling on our allies to support our movement. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that it?
That's all the communications.
Well, normally we don't make comments on the communications section, but I'd like to thank the folks for coming in to testify and for showing support for the issue of homelessness. I understand your concerns, and we are sympathetic to the needs of the homeless community. I also respect your right to make your voice heard. The city opened emergency shelter beds this week and are opening more soon that will hopefully use creative solutions to accommodate couples, those with disabilities, and those with pets. I'm also going to work closely with the Housing Authority of Portland to increase acceptance of Section 8 housing vouchers that will provide real homes for people. Right now, as many as 40% of the vouchers are being returned unused because the market has historically low vacancy rates, and people with Section 8 housing vouchers are having a difficult time finding housing, and that's wrong. You've also asked that the anti-camping and sidewalk obstruction ordinances be suspended or ended. I want to be honest with you, I won't support either of those measures. I believe they are important to the livability of our city for everyone. The solution to homelessness is not camping. It's helping folks get into housing. The city has been doing that. We have moved nearly 3,000 individuals and families into permanent housing as part of the 10-year plan to end homelessness, and that work is continuing. Nearly 1,000 apartments have either been built or being brought online, and our goal is 2,200 in the 10-year plan. We're looking at how we can enhance services around shelter beds we provide so that people are not caught in the endless cycle of shelters, but get help while in a shelter to transition to a home. None of this will happen overnight, but all of us up here on council are committed to making it happen. Appreciate you being here this morning. We are going to hold off moving to the consent agenda until the fourth council member is here. Please read the 9:30 time certain.
Item 561, transmit mayor's message for fiscal year 2008-09 proposed budget.
I'm convening the budget committee for the purpose of receiving the budget message. Committee members received copies of the budget document late last week. The mayor's message is part of that document and a copy is also attached. The meeting of the budget committee is continued to Thursday, May 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the King Elementary School Auditorium, where we will take public testimony on the budget. King School is located at 4906 Northeast 6th Avenue. And I look forward to seeing all of you there. Thank you. I'm now reconvening the City Council. We will hold off on the 9:45 time certain until Commissioner Adams is here. It's 10 o'clock.
Close.
Do we have the folks here to testify on this?
Yes, I believe so. Do we have, Denise, the folks here needed?
Are you ready for the 9:45? It's the Local Improvement District on 31st and Francis.
Yeah,
okay. Please read the 9:45 time certain.
Item 562, declare intent to initiate Local Improvement District formation proceedings to construct street improvements north of Francis Street in the Southeast 31st Avenue Local Improvement District.
Commissioner Adams.
Andrew.
Good morning, Council members. Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. I passed out an amendment that I'll ask you to approve here in a moment. I just want to show you a couple slides on the project. The first slide here is a map of the petition support that we received to improve Southeast 31st Avenue north of Francis Street. We have 87.4% petition support to move forward with the project, including a petition received for the wavered property that is shown in blue there on the east side of the street. 31st Avenue is a dead-end street north of Francis Street. Just a quick recap of the project. It's a fairly small project area. We don't have that many properties. We have a mix of rental properties, vacant lots, and one owner-occupied home. The project objectives are pretty straightforward. This is an inner southeast neighborhood, and when you turn down 31st Avenue, you see a large sea of gravel at the end of the street. There's a lot of dust and mud, and during the winter, there's typically a lake of stormwater there that isn't properly drained. So what the project would do is pave the street, provide for stormwater drainage, and also build new sidewalks to connect to the existing sidewalk network. Just as importantly, what the project would also do is construct curbs along 31st Avenue. What we have a problem with right now are vehicles coming down 31st and then using that as an illegal cut-through to get to Powell Boulevard. So here's the a picture of the project area from July of 1999. There was a building on what is now a vacant lot. There was an arson and the building was torched. You can see the firefighters working on putting that fire out. Since that fire occurred, that building has been demolished and removed. What we now have, though, is we have a vacant lot. You can see that gravel area where people are coming down 31st Avenue, and they're driving down that area to get to Powell. I'm not sure if they're going to the McDonald's restaurant or the strip club or what businesses they're trying to access, but what this project would do is build curbs and prevent that cut-through traffic. So fairly straightforward project. I wanted to ask council to entertain a motion to amend the resolution to accept some additional petition support that we received after the resolution was filed. And we have some property owners here to speak with us today, and I'm, of course, happy to answer any questions you might have.
Do you have the amendment before you, with you?
Carla had the original, and I think she passed out the copies of the amendment with the Tuesday memo.
Yes, they were.
I'd be happy to move that amendment.
Second.
Please call a vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye.
Are there further questions?
We have people signed up to testify.
How many folks are signed up to testify?
We have three.
Okay, please call them forward.
The Terry Emmert, Janice Wilson, and Bradley Mattson, please come forward.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes. You want to proceed?
My name is Bradley Mattson. I live at 3818 Southeast 31st. I own the two pieces of property on the west side that would be that comprise about 100 linear feet of the project.
I'm Janice Wilson, and
are you folks speaking together?
Actually, no. Did you want?
Did you wish to say anything else?
Certainly. The concern that I have and the concerns that the neighbors who are not right on the project but are just to the south of the project on 31st Avenue have are mostly livability issues. The traffic, as Andrew mentioned, that is illicitly going through Mr. Emmert's property is a big concern. They can tend to four-wheel through that and come down through 31st Avenue with excessive speeds and somewhat recklessly. I believe Andrew has done a very good job in resolving some of the issues that we would have, and I am in support of the project. However, I don't know that there is a real good financial reason for doing it from my perspective.
Hi, I'm Janice Wilson, and I own the duplex at 3724 South and 3726 Southeast 31st. And I don't live there. I just manage the duplex. And I think that if we go ahead with this, it would be great for the neighborhood, the community, and that there's a lot of people that go down there and dump garbage and all kinds of stuff, and it's hard to get the duplex rented because of the street. You know, it's got big check holes, and there's a lot of people that are out there, you know, drinking liquor and alcohol, and there's syringes and needles, and it's, you know, it needs to be cleaned up, and with the street and sidewalk and curb and that, it'll really clean it up and make it a better place for everybody. So.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Terry Emmert, and I'm speaking in support of the improvement, as we do own the vacant piece of property at the end of the street. And I think Andrew has done a good job putting the people together, as we've been trying to get people put together on this for over 10 years to get this done. As camping on the property and dumping on the property has been going on for as long as we've owned the property. And I heard the testimony earlier, And unfortunately, when they dump on private property or they camp on private property, you, the city, find the property owner and leave it up to the property owner to clean it up. And it's been a cleanup problem every year and a tremendous cleanup problem. And so we think that this improvement to the neighborhood would maybe help prevent that and also prevent people driving on through the property. And I do believe that if the city is in earnest about taking care of some of these problems, they shouldn't be penalizing property owners from trying to secure their property, no different than the city wants to keep their sidewalks and their parks free for the public. And anyway, we give complete support to this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that all who had signed up?
That's all.
Is there anybody here who wishes to testify to this specific matter? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Andrew, thanks for your great work. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 10 a.m. time certain.
Item 563, amend fee schedules for electrical enforcement penalties, facilities permit, land use services, neighborhood inspections, noise control, plumbing, signs, site development, zoning, and certain construction permits.
Mr. Leonard?
Denise Klein for the Bureau of Development Services.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Denise Klein, and I'm with the Bureau of Development Services. I'm the Administrative Services Manager. So this is the annual time that we come before you to talk about our fee increases. As you know, we start by looking at our services. We start by talking to our customers, talking to our constituents and stakeholders about the level of service that they receive and working really closely with them throughout the year before we ever attempt to talk about fees. We also look at our economic forecast and make revenue projections, put together our financial plan, and only then do we look at what should our fees be. Should there be any fee changes? So we're always looking 5 years out. So we have fee changes for many of our programs. What is missing from our list of fee increases is the building and mechanical fees. We are not increasing either one of those this year. Again, this will be the fourth year in a row that we have not increased building or mechanical fees, and those are some of the most costly fees for our stakeholder, developers, customers. So that's good news. For the rest of the fees, most of them are in the 5% range. There's one that is higher. It's our field issuance remodel program, which we started several years ago as a pilot. It's been a very popular program. What we do is for contractors who wish to sign up with us. These are remodeling contractors for single-family homes. We work with them directly and have our inspector meet them in the field, look at the project, approve the plan, do the inspections. So it's kind of the one-stop in the field shop sort of thing. We started out with a fee, and we've been looking at the fees, have worked with our customers. They're certainly supportive. It's a 12% fee increase, but they're very supportive. We have a waiting list of people to get in the door, and we're expanding that program. It's been quite successful, and we're very proud of it. As you also know, we also work with all of our stakeholders when we get to the fee setting time of year, and we talked with at least 14 of our stakeholder groups, have sent notices out to them that we're proposing fee increases. We've met with 9 of them. In the cover letter that went to you, there was indication that a couple of our stakeholders had some concerns about our fees. One of them is the plumbing industry, and I want to let you know that we met with them yesterday. We met with 2 representatives of that industry and came away from the table that they are okay. They wanted me to relay to you that Portland Heating and Cooling Contractors, PHCC, is okay with the fee increase. They would like to meet with us every 6 months to look at our workload, at our statistics, at our revenues, and at our fees. And so we're going to be doing that with them instead of a once-a-year meeting, but meet with them twice a year to go over that. It struck me this year that when we met with our stakeholders, they have a lot of trust in us, and I have really appreciated that. an interesting thing that happened the other day is one, we were meeting with two stakeholders, and one said, well, if the economy really tanks, will you really lay off staff? And we didn't have to answer that question because another one of our stakeholders answered the question and said, yes, they will. So I was really surprised and appreciative that our stakeholders really had that kind of trust and confidence in us. As you know, y'all have been reading the papers about the national economy, and so have we. We are keeping a very close eye on our workload, on our numbers of inspections, the numbers of plan coming in the door, working really closely with our stakeholders to keep a very, very close eye on what's going on with the national and local economy. So we're going to be really watching more closely than we normally do to ensure that if we do see the glimmers of downturns, that we'll be ready to deal with that.
So just to follow up on that, so you're watching, have you seen any trends?
Yes, we have.
Fewer building permits, fewer...
Yeah, we have seen from last year a bit of a drop from last year in permits and in valuation, but our projections for the out years in our financial plan took that into consideration. So we're still, I wouldn't say we're 100% confident because I don't think anybody is right now, but we're comfortable, I would say, with our revenue projections, but we're also watching them really carefully. We've seen a drop in residential construction, but we've also seen that commercial construction is still holding very well right now. So that's kind of made up for it. We've also seen, as we always see, when new home construction goes down, we see an increase in remodeling. So we see work coming in the door, even though there's not as many new homes being built, but lots of remodeling is going on.
You are seeing it, lots of remodeling.
We're seeing more remodeling, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good, thank you.
Thank you.
Questions?
Thank you, Denise.
Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this particular matter? Non-emergency and moves to a second reading.
I'd like to just say a couple things. Appreciate the excellent work of the Bureau of Development Services in general, but Denise in particular, there was a time when we would have these annual hearings and have the construction industry and the development industry in here not happy with the service they got, not happy with the fee increases. The Bureau now has work groups where all of those folks are involved in making these decisions, and they have come light years from where they've been to where they are now, and I want to recognize that and let everybody at the Bureau know how much I appreciate their outstanding collaborative work and their very focused solution-oriented problem-solving that I think serves Portland really well. So thank you, Denise, and thank everybody at the Bureau.
Thank you. We move to the regular agenda. Please read item 585.
You want to take care of the consent agenda first?
Oh, yes. Excuse me. We'll go to the consent agenda. Do any commissioners wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Does any member of this audience wish to pull any particular item from the consent agenda? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Move to the regular agenda. Please read item 585.
Authorize the Portland Office of Transportation to enter into a contract with Max J. Cooney Construction, owner of the old Sovie Island Bridge, to rehabilitate, relocate, and acquire the old Sovie Island Bridge center span for the purpose of moving it to Northwest Flanders Street over I-405.
With the Council's permission, I'd like to move this back to my office. The project will not be going forward.
Hearing no objections. Please read item 586.
Establish a rainy day fund for fiscal year 2009-2010.
As mayor, I've long advocated for a rainy day fund to shelter the Portland's infrastructure and public safety from budget cuts in rough economic times. Today I'm asking Council to reaffirm its commitment to our city's infrastructure and public safety systems. I'm proposing that instead of immediately expending any excess funds during the fall budget monitoring process, City Council reserve those funds for next year's budget process. The past 2 years, Council has appropriated $30 million in revenue for projects without the in-depth review by Council budget teams and, most importantly, without input from the community. Today, we're seeing the results of a worsening economy. In my proposed budget, I've allocated nearly $5 million in ongoing and one-time resources for our crumbling public safety communication system. And even this amount won't fully complete that project. The next City Council will face a challenging economic environment and must fund those critical public safety and infrastructure needs. Casey?
I also have an amendment that I'd like to offer at the appropriate point. Maybe that's after Casey speaks.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of Council. Casey Short, Financial Planning Manager. What this resolution does is simply reserve any additional beginning fund balance that will come into the general fund next year above what's already anticipated. 25% of that for the Public Safety Systems Revitalization Project, and the remainder will be set aside to be used as a resource for the 2009-10 budget. That's quite simply what it does. There's a contingent point in there that if revenues go down by 3% or more from what's anticipated, then the provisions of this will be moot because we'll be up to our eyeballs in trying to cut budgets. So we'd need every resource we had. But that's the gist of this resolution as it's currently before you.
Mr. Saltzman.
Yes, I'd like to offer, I guess it's an amendment in the nature of a substitute. And what this amendment does is to accept what the mayor is proposing, but also say that we need to look at our current year's budget to begin identifying resources for a rainy day fund, in addition to looking at resources in our next year budget. So the intent of this amendment is to identify unused resources in the current fiscal year we're in right now that ends July 1st and have them put into a rainy day fund of up to $5 million. If that $5 million is not accumulated in this ending fund balance for this year, the unanticipated funds in the fall budget monitoring process, as the mayor is proposing, would then fill that gap. So the intent is to get the $5 million for the rainy day fund, but it's also to look at this year's funds as the beginning of that $5 million fund. And I guess I wanted to ask Casey just a couple questions. It seems like each year we have an ending fund balance based on unused resources. How much have those been historically?
I happen to have with me the proposed budget. Last year, this year, 07-08, the actual ending fund balance for the prior year, which becomes the beginning balance, was $81 million. The year before that, it was $70 million. The year before that, it was $51 million. Some of this, and I don't have any idea how much, was encumbrances, things that bureaus have contracts for, have obligations to pay, and they carry the authorization forward. Some of that is all, the largest portion of it is also has also already been included as a resource to the following year's budget. So, for example, the proposed budget includes an estimate, and it's clearly only an estimate at this point, of $38.9 million in the beginning fund balance, which consists of our estimate of what revenues will be above expenditures at the end of the year, and a part of that is encumbrances again. Where that's going to shift up or down, we don't know at this point, and we're not going to know until the year's over.
So that was my next question, if you could provide an estimate of what you think the year-end balance would be.
We just don't have it, Commissioner, and we're not going to have it until the bills start coming in, probably until August, because we've got the year-end and then another 6 weeks or so to clean up all the bills that come in toward the end of the year, the payments that get made, all the reconciliations. It's a long, drawn-out process, and it doesn't just happen on the 1st of July. And we don't make an estimate at the end of the fiscal year because we frankly don't know what revenues are going to come in finally and what expenses we've got that we're going to have to cover.
So, okay, under this amendment to the mayor's resolution, We're asking OMF to identify, you know, resources that might be obtained through reserve accounts, vacancies, and other line items relative to historic spending rates. When is the meaningful point where the council can say, okay, we're going to take whatever number that is and say this becomes part of the rainy day fund now, which we will be creating today, versus making the decision about the fall bump and whether that revenue will be needed to make up the $5 million.
We normally get these numbers to you in the fall bump. We bring in the actual fund balance that is pretty much through the audit process when we bring you the fall bump in late November or early December, and it takes that long to finish the annual audit. It's due legally by the end of December, and it's usually done, at least materially done, sometime in October or November. It can drag on into December, and we don't have the final numbers until that's done. But all the things that you're asking for, if I understand the intent of your amendment correctly, which is to find unspent revenue in the prior year, in 07-08, that all gets figured into the beginning fund balance, the ending fund balance for 07-08, the beginning fund balance for next year, which we bring to you in the fall bump, along with everything else we bring in the fall bump, all the requests for funding. And all of any difference between what we budgeted and what there actually is available is there, and we tell you what that is in the fall after we've closed the year's books, the prior year's books.
So this allows us to book a this amendment, which I support, allows us to book at least up to a $5 million rainy day reserve fund as part of the approved and adopted budget process. And I like that approach because the original version left it up to if there's any money left over. Mm-hmm. And so I support this approach and this amendment.
Well, I suppose it also begs the question, if we're inquiring about ending fund balances in the current budget, that becomes a component of constructing the proposed budget that we're in the middle of debating. And one has to ask that without disagreeing on projects or what's funded, because I don't think there's disagreement here, at least with me, on the specific items that are being proposed to be funded. But for an example, something the mayor and I have worked very hard together on and are really joined at the hip on making sure happens is the 800 megahertz system at the 911 center and the CAD system. There's no disagreement about that. What I'm interested, however, in this debate and in this discussion is why on a project like that that would have a lifespan of at least 15 years, we would virtually use all of our one-time resources to fund that as opposed to a significantly smaller amount of ongoing resources that would then, in this current proposed budget and in the context that we're discussing, allow us to put away $5 million now, plus another $5 million probably in the fall bump for a total of $10 million. So can you respond to that?
I think the answer to that, Commissioner Leonard, is that the proposed budget commits all the available ongoing dollars, and if we're going to increase the amount of ongoing dollars to pay over a longer time for this project or anything else, we've got to reduce commitments for other ongoing commitments that are included in the proposed budget in order to make room for that spending on that project.
Yeah, but that's obviously. But my point is, I guess, is more of a question. Is it typical for us to pay for a capital improvement project by anything other than funding it over the term of the project?
It depends on the nature of the project, the cost of the project, what the funding sources are for the project.
Pick a project.
Well,
the current CAD system, the current 800 megahertz radio system, how were they paid for?
How were they paid for in the past? I don't know. What we're proposing in the proposed budget is
I do. They were paid for over time.
Okay.
Well, actually, the CAD system right now is being paid for partly out of electric light settlement. Mm-hmm. It was $4.2 million. Plus some additional one-time resources
yes.
this year. And then I think all of that's going to be out of either that settlement money or one-time money.
No, I understand that. That's my point, is that the highest and best use of one-time money when we're heading into a recession? Should we not be contemplating in this budget having a discussion about how we are funding projects in the proposed budget, not whether or not we should mm-hmm. fund them, but how we fund them so we can set aside money? That's my only point. I mean, versus just focusing on ending fund balances.
Well, I think to your question, Commissioner Leonard, that's at the crux of a policy decision for the council to have about how you want to spend the money and how you want to structure it.
I had another question about the proposed amendment, and that has to do partly with one of the other projects that Commissioner Leonard and I are working on, which is Project 57. We're going to reduce the number of jail beds we need, and there will be an additional amount of money to apply to treatment beds, prostitution alternative programs, mm-hmm. and whatever is needed to accomplish those things. Would that money be considered as part of that $5 million if it was not spent?
If it's not otherwise spent, that's an additional resource to the general fund.
That would be up to the discretion of the majority of the city council.
Absolutely.
The other question I had is that one of the issues raised in this was, would this, if money was taken from unexpended funds associated with positions, would those positions be eliminated if the $5 million was taken?
Well, that gets to a question that I wanted to ask about how we're going to structure and actually implement what the resolution, the substitute, or the proposed amendments that Commissioner Saltzman has put forward. As I understood Commissioner Saltzman's introduction, what we were looking at is making sure we captured all of the savings and additional revenues that might have been available at the end of the year to put into the beginning fund balance and earmark up to $5 million of that to set aside as a rainy day fund. That's somewhat at odds with or inconsistent with what I heard Commissioner Adams say, which is to include those funds in the approved and adopted budget. It will be a difficult task, to say the least, to find underspending in the 07-08 budget between now and next Wednesday when the council is scheduled to approve the budget. We might be able to pull it off with an estimate, certainly, by the time of the adopted at the end of the year.
Well,
what we would be bringing to you, I think, if we were to go ahead with it in the way of looking at the 07-08 savings or additional revenue, would be for us in financial planning to be able to identify where some vacancies are, what some historical expenditure rates have been, although we would only be doing that for the current year with partial year information because the year's not done yet. And I think that we'd also need to then go back to the bureaus and come back to the council to understand why some of these vacancies were there, why some things were underspent, how much of them are going to need to be carried over, what some of the mitigating factors are, so we're just not shooting in the dark about looking at a number saying you haven't spent your budget, so you shouldn't need that much budget.
So you could give us estimates by the time we do the adopted budget.
We could.
Which is in?
End of June.
End of June.
The 23rd, I believe.
Well, I want to express my frustration because I made this request 2 weeks ago to your office, as you know, and you were countermanded by the mayor's office in pursuing it. And I just want to express my frustration that now you are legitimately telling us that this will be difficult to do because you might not have enough time. I understand you're sort of caught in the middle, but this was a good request 2 weeks ago. It's a good request now. What I'd also like you to pursue, in addition to the possibility of providing us the best estimates you can, and that is to get an extension of time for a deadline for submitting something to TSCC. So we have more work. We have more time to work on, polishing this budget. Council might know that we got updated estimates, forecasts from the PDOT fiscal shop based on gas tax and mileage. Estimates from Oregon Department of Transportation that we have a hole of $2 million in the revenues at the Transportation Department for the city. And so I'm going to be asking the City Council to fill that. We'll be looking at cut options. We'll be looking at revenue options. But I also want to look, and I propose that we use some of that rainy day fund now because it's raining in the Portland Office of Transportation. It's pouring.
So, Mayor Potter, in the interest of transparency and having an open discussion, I would like to have us, at least as council, have an understanding about the use of staff during the budget. It's become unfortunately obvious to some of us, but some of the professional staff that we have historically relied on to help us answer these questions have been constrained by your office, if not you directly, somebody within your office from working with us and providing responsive information and providing the technical assistance that we need to do our job. I have not had this experience before, and I've experienced it. Commissioner Adams has experienced it, and I'd sure like to have a commitment from you that the staff has a relationship with us just as the city attorney does, that they work with us unfettered by any political interference from anybody.
I'd like the OMF, and I don't know if you can do it, Casey, or somebody else, to respond to what the request was from Commissioner Adams, but also I'd be interested to find out what it was that you asked for and that were not provided.
It isn't always what's not provided. It's that your office insists on being included in what I consider to be confidential discussions with my office. So as I'm preparing with OMF, so as I'm preparing an alternative to your budget, your office knows about it because they've been directed to be told of any inquiries from my office. That compromises my ability to develop creative alternatives that may or may not be something I pursue for fear of them being politicized. And the city attorney has been outstanding in, as you know, working with each of us on individual issues that are confidential to commissioners' offices and not shared with other offices. That has historically been exactly the relationship we've had with OMF until this budget year. And I'm disappointed, and I'm just asking for your commitment that that will not continue.
Well, and I was asking you for a specific example, because you...
Sharing my budget information with your staff is shared then, with OMF staff is then shared with your staff by direction of your staff. And that's what I consider political interference.
So...
Mayor Potter and members of the council, for the record, I'm Ken Russ, the director of OMF. This is a complicated area for us as OMF bureau directors to work in. Unlike the city attorney's office, we do report to the mayor, but we also report to the entire council, I in particular. We try to do the work of the entire council, but we have, because of that reporting relationship, we believe an obligation to keep our commissioner in charge informed of the different requests. Generally, it works pretty well. Sometimes it can be clumsy. I think there have been instances here where it has become clumsy. We are in a difficult position trying to provide factual information and to respond to requests. But during the budget process, where the mayor is proposing the budget and has given budget instructions to us as to how to prepare the budget, it puts us in a difficult position when we're being asked to, in effect, modify the mayor's proposed budget or do things that are counter to what, or at least in addition to what the mayor has instructed us to do in terms of preparing his budget, to do that without full council consideration and direction to us.
And Ken, I so much appreciate what you're saying, but you do understand it puts then those of us on the council at a distinct disadvantage in preparing alternate proposals.
And if I could add to that is we are in the approved budget portion of the budget process. I don't think anyone on this council did anything to interfere or to even ask questions while the mayor was putting together his proposed budget. But once that proposed budget is announced, it has been the practice of this city council that during the approved budget process, that is the time when the council can ask the questions that we have on any issue related to the budget. And OMF has traditionally been responsive to those requests.
And kept them confidential.
Up until now. So I was told when I asked, when I sat down with Casey after I had the briefing on the mayor's proposed budget, that I wanted to have a $5 million rainy day fund as part of our approved budget making process. Then the resolution came in for the mayor with an alternative. So during the 2 weeks when I asked about it, the mayor came in with a resolution. I wasn't consulted. That's his choice not to consult me. But I was also told that Casey could not pursue. So you're all caught in the middle that the mayor's office, I got an email from the mayor's office that said they would not support my request to do the kind of research tasks that I asked for.